Morning, everybody. I'm Jason Bednar. I cover MedTech here at Piper. Our next fireside chat is with MDxHealth. Very happy to have with us today MDx's CEO, Michael McGarrity. Thanks a lot for making the trip across the country, Mike. Really appreciate you being with us.
Jason, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. So why don't we get right into Q&A? I'd say what a difference a year makes, Mike. I mean, it was a year ago at this time, it was, you know, probably a little bit of a different conversation. You've had a lot going on, and, you know, maybe for the sake of, you know, starting off with a bunch of back patting, it's all been, you know, really darn positive. So we'll touch on a lot of those elements today, but, you know, first, could you just reflect on maybe the developments of the past year? You know, what's gone better than expected? Is there anything you would have hoped would have unfolded better?
Yeah. So Jason, you know, we had a lot, to your point, going in 2023. We were coming off the acquisition of the GPS test, which the integration there was complex as a carve-out acquisition. I'd point largely to our restructured, reorganized sales organization. So we had, prior to the acquisition, we had 30 direct reps. We now have 50. So bringing those over, you know, in my experience, every territory changed, incentive comp plans changed, and that can be very disruptive, and yet we feel really positive about what we have today through that integration. That, I think, coupled with, you know, the whole rationale and thesis for that acquisition was that our menu now for prostate cancer is really unmatched. When you look at the diagnostic pathway of prostate cancer from elevated PSA all the way through to high-grade intervention, active surveillance, or risk stratification post positive biopsy, that GPS acquisition really filled our last gap. And then I would point to the success of our Resolve test, right, which really was our first, what I would call, channel opportunity, where we think we have the strongest channel into urology. We have 70 total people in the field right now, and we, you know, we know and we knew we can take advantage of that channel, and we want to be really smart by doing that. And we spent, as you know, Jason, about 12 months on diligence for the Resolve market, the fit, and the target into our urology customer base. And coming out of this year, we're at a $10 million run rate. And all of those additions are accretive to our gross margin, which you're seeing come through with our Q3 results. So we came into 2022 with one test generating revenue, and we now have four, all covered by Medicare, all included in the NCCN guidelines. And, you know, we think that's given us the footing to really drive revenue, as well as put the leverage in our P&L that gives us the visibility to turning profitable in the first half of 25.
Yeah, well, that's a great introduction, and we'll touch on a lot of those elements as we go through the session here today. But why don't we first, like, maybe step back and talk about, you know, the patient funnel that matters to you, because this was part of the dynamic, the, you know, during the pandemic, where you had a pullback in a lot of that, you know, that diagnostic testing that would have been normally taking place, just fewer visits to the office and less screening. But what's, as we, you know, kind of bring it forward to today, you know, what's been the experience over the past several months with respect to getting more of that normal prostate screening process going?
Yeah, the pandemic had a profound impact on our business, and yet we believed it was really important to keep our channel in place. PSA screenings, which obviously is where all the patient flow starts, were estimated to be down 50% during the pandemic. And what we've seen as expected is the prostate cancer incidences are on the rise. So while we don't view that positively, we view the patient flow coming back as very positive to our business. And that now we stand alone on the other side of an initial biopsy, right? We've got a solution with our confirmed test after a negative initial biopsy and the GPS after a positive initial biopsy. So we think that as patient flow comes back, and unfortunately as prostate cancer incidence rises, that we're well positioned to serve our patients and our urology customer base.
Okay. Do you think the market has normalized enough where your business predictability has improved?
We do. So we, you know, actually that's a great way to put it. You know, we think that at this point our business is, we're better suited to predict and project, right? Based on the menu, our experience, our sales organization in place now. And I'll go back to very, very difficult to integrate and restructure the sales organization on the run as well as cross-train. So while that took a couple of quarters, we think at the mid-year, I would say, of 2023, we think we've got all the pieces in place, and we would expect that trend to continue a growth from the top line and all the way through the P&L. And we think we can hold our OpEx pretty straight away, which again drives that leverage and visibility to profitability.
Okay. And maybe building off some of that, you know, volume return, you've got a couple tests that are what I would consider maybe a little bit more mature, but they're not behaving like mature tests with Confirm and Oncotype, with the GPS test. You know, do you think there's sustainable momentum with those two tests, you know, things that you can still leverage out of this more robust commercial sales force that you have? How do you see those two tests as you look forward, you know, coming off of what's been a really strong year?
Yeah, I'll comment on each of them specifically. So Confirm, you know, we're really, this isn't a pitch, it's factually accurate. We're the only test on the other side of negative biopsy that can, with a 96% negative predictive value, either provide clinically actionable information for a biopsy that was missed, and or rule that patient out for a follow-up repeat biopsy setting and put them back into annual PSA screening. So that market, there's room for us to grow. The GPS, to your point, is that market is more mature. However, if you look at GPS, you know, the data associated with the GPS test for low and mid-grade cancers, where the majority of patients fall, we feel is best in class. So I think in the lab model, there's value in standardization. In other words, we feel like our MDX lab, from a world-class service support for our urology customers, patient advocacy, that it makes sense now with our broad menu for us to really partner with our urology practices where MDX Health is their partner in prostate cancer.
Okay. All right. Great. And then maybe shifting over to Select MDX, you did have some catch-up benefits and payments just in the most recent quarter here, the third quarter. But the story here really has been one where you should be seeing additional coverage wins that materialize over the next, I'll call it, months or quarters. So I guess from your experience, how should people like myself or investors think about, you know, this coverage building over time?
Yeah, so clearly that was a long road with Medicare coverage for Select,
yeah.
But we know as a model with our other tests that Medicare is the catalyst for broader commercial and private payer coverage. So we received our Medicare coverage in Q2, and while we don't put out, you know, public notice of each contract, we, you know, our managed care market access team drives, you know, we had Cigna covering Select, which was a big win there, and that's a really good example of that came, I think, 60 days after our Medicare coverage. So our market access team has been working our payers over a period of time such that we feel we have a kind of a running start as we go into that. And we would expect that to continue. Obviously, our focus for the last few quarters has been on solidifying the GPS Confirm business, but Select was all cost carry for us, and to your point, we now have revenue coming over that, which we wanted to get a experience with our Medicare payments. Just very conservative on the RCM line, but we saw that come through in Q3, and we expect that to continue.
Okay. Do you plan to, like let us all know when you have, like, big wins like Cigna, or?
Yeah, I think over the last few quarters, we had United coverage come over our GPS test.
Yep.
That pointed specifically to the GPS test in that patient population that I referred to.
Mm-hmm.
And Cigna, yeah. So we'll keep that
okay.
Coverage. And, you know, we have two levers to drive revenue. Our sales team drives unit adoption into our urology practices, and then our market access, which is part of our commercial team, works very closely with the sales organization, and they drive coverage. So that shows up in our ASP. And if you look at 2023, particularly the back half, we've seen accretion in our ASPs across our menu.
Right.
So we're very encouraged by that, and we think that supports sustainable growth on the top line.
Okay. Having this, the coverage and the expanding coverage in place, Medicare and then commercial payers eventually, broadly covering Select, you know, what kind of impact, if any, does this have on volumes? Does your sales force begin pushing this more aggressively instead of focusing almost exclusively on Confirm and GPS? Do physicians become more aware, and more willing to use the test?
Yeah.
What are some of the effects?
It's an interesting dynamic because it's somewhat counterintuitive, where you would expect coverage in and of itself to drive adoption. And yet, in our model, you know, our urology customers are, for lack of a better term, somewhat agnostic to the economics, right? They see value in our test, they adopt it, they order the test, they send us a sample, we report the result back to the clinician, regardless of payer coverage profile, and then we chase the payers. So, we feel like our sales team drives that adoption, and then the coverage just gives us leverage on growth.
Okay. I guess, does your sales team get more aggressive once coverage is in place and focus, I don't want to say focus less on Confirm and GPS, but, you know, maybe put a little more emphasis on Select?
Yeah, with the exception of Select, what I referred to over the last few quarters, you know, we feel like our sales team is charged with driving our adoption of our menu.
Okay.
And we don't, you know, I think it used to be when I joined in 2019, it was, are you a Confirm customer? Which are you focused more on? We believe that our menu can and should be driven as the approach to taking patients through that pathway.
Okay. Coming back over to GPS, has the NCCN guideline coverage expansion had an effect on the business here this year?
Yeah, NCCN is more important, I would say, to delineate maybe than coverage, right? So there are a number of clinicians that operate to and follow the guidelines. So we now, it's really important, and we feel it's really a benefit that we have all of our prostate cancer tests included in the NCCN guidelines, covered by Medicare, New York State approval. Those are all significant barriers to entry, and we think we're set there.
Okay, great. The milestone payments with Exact Sciences, you've been very clear since you did this deal, like, you fully expect to have to pay the milestones because the business is gonna do plenty well enough that you're gonna be required to. So can you remind us what the structure of those milestone payments look like? Because they've been revised since you initially did the deal. When is the potential first payment, and maybe what are the means you have to fund that first payment and then the subsequent payments?
Yeah. So just as a reminder, the acquisition, we closed in August of 2022. The structure was $30 million upfront, of which we took no cash off the balance sheet. It was funded by $25 million in our debt facility, and then Exact Sciences taking $5 million in equity. As we looked at our business going forward, you know, we engaged clearly with Exact Sciences and looked for relief in that earn-out. So it was contemplated originally to be 2024, 2025, and 2026, and we've now pushed that to 2025, 2026, 2027, which we think is a very material development for MDxHealth, and really, I think, demonstrates the partnership we have with Exact. Because the trade for that was them taking additional equity in MDxHealth, largely by a warrant at 50% premium to the market. So, you know, for a cash-burning company to push their earn-out out 3 years from the date of the acquisition, the beginning of the earn-out, we think reflects their understanding, their view of our business trajectory and our operating discipline and commercial execution. So we really value the partnership there, and we think that was a material development. As far as the funding of that, you know, we think we have optionality in our business. And one aspect I would point to is when you look at our menu at the beginning of 2022, from a revenue generation perspective, it looks very, very different today.
Mm-hmm.
If you made the assumption that it will look different 18 months from now, that's probably a reasonable assumption, and I base that comment on, you know, we want to be a growth company, and we think we've done two things with MDxHealth. We've de-risked the business, and our goal was to become more obvious, and by that I mean clearly with high-quality investors, but also with strategics. So when you look at our growth outside of our core menu, GPS was clearly a transformational acquisition, but our Resolve is a really good example of very little capital investment to bring up a test that's driving significant impact and influence on our growth. We run a growth strategy process at MDxHealth, where we look at growth opportunities. We're only gonna do smart things. We're not just looking to put more products in our reps' bags. Resolve is an example of that. I would say that 2 years ago, all of our view on growth opportunities was outbound. It was us looking at the landscape. I would say that today it's very, very different, where we have a lot of inbound, and we'll be smart and selective with those, but it goes to the point that our menu and our growth opportunities, we expect to be dynamic as we go forward in the favorable.
Okay. And then to go back to those milestone payments, not to dwell on them, but can they be made in cash or stock, or do you have other debt means to access?
Yes, on the latter, and on the former, it's at our discretion to push either cash or equity.
Okay.
And as part of the earnout amendment, we actually, the Exact Sciences equity position, we had capped at 5%, and they requested to take that up to 7.5%. As mm-hmm. part of the amendment. So as we look at earnouts going forward, we can make those payments in cash or equity up to 7.5%.
Got it. Okay. And then over to Resolve. I don't want to say I'm saving the best for last, but the growth here has just been phenomenal. You've been crushing it. It's honestly at a point where I have a really hard time thinking about how volumes are going to perform here going forward. So I guess, what's a realistic expectation as we look ahead for that test? I know we've gotten a nice kind of, call it sophomore year lift of Resolve, but where's the growth coming from? What does it look like as we look ahead?
Yeah, so two comments I would make on that. One, the adoption of our Resolve test is very sticky. So our assumption was, and our thesis was, that we would only target our current customers in the urology, the specialists, because this is a specialized test for patients referred to urology for either serial, multi-organism, complex infections. So when our urology customers adopt Resolve, I think that shows in our numbers, it's sticky. And then in my experience with launching new products into a sales organization, there's always kind of the rule of threes, right? You get a third of the sales force loves new products, and they go right at them. A third will wait till you adjust and evolve the product, which we've done over the last 12 to 15 months. We've made improvements. We're probably on our third generation of that test, optimizing it. And so we have kind of two drivers, one focused customer adoption and then engagement by our sales organization with our incentive compensation plan that we design each year to drive the behavior that we want.
Okay. The success with Resolve, you've spoken a little bit about maybe being selective with new tests, not just throwing any old test in your bag and having a broader menu. But does it make you more keen on introducing or bringing in, you know, another test, whether it's internal or external, that can be really impactful because you have been so successful with Resolve?
It does, Jason. I think that was the key, right? It was, if we had gotten that wrong, it would have given less confidence that we can do that. But I think what's important is the diligence we did up front to validate fit with our channel. It's not dilutive to our focus in prostate cancer, that the adoption is sustainable, that it's accretive to our gross margin day one, dollar one. So that will be the criteria that we take forward with any additional growth opportunities.
Okay. And do you have a preference as we think about internal versus external in terms of a new test that might be on your radar, and you know, does it need to fit within your existing call point? A lot of other questions I could ask, but go ahead.
No. Yeah, that's right. I mean, we are a urology-focused growth company. So I think that at this point, our channel is focused directly into urology. We believe that's where a lot – if you ask me what the greatest asset at MDxHealth is today, I would say it's our channel. While we have IP and world-class laboratory operation and really good coverage payer, you know, everything going forward here, in my experience, prior to MDxHealth, is driven by a best-in-class channel.
Okay. And then do you have a preference, internal versus external, or?
I would say, you know, to go out and do another acquisition like the GPS may not be in our near term.
Yeah.
However, we're open to and looking at, and we think that there's a fair amount of inbound interesting things that we would contemplate.
Okay. Would that be like, you know, partnership or licensing type arrangement, or?
It could be anything like that.
Okay.
So if you look, we have two good examples, right? The GPS was an M&A acquisition.
Yeah.
The Resolve was a, for lack of a better term, a homegrown opportunity that we executed. There's things in the middle, which would be strategic distribution, license, partnerships.
Okay. Okay. I'm gonna get a little sell-side analyst on you here. So, you know, when we try and pair together where you're gonna finish 2023 revenue, and then I think your comment most recently that you're getting to cash flow breakeven or adjusted EBITDA breakeven first half 2025, call it cash flow breakeven. I mean, we can toggle various line items in our model to get there, but you probably need to do at least low to mid-teens revenue growth, I think, in order to set yourself up where you can hit that first half 2025 breakeven. You know, is that right? And then are there other maybe gross margin or OpEx guardrails that you'd throw out, in order to get to those, that, you know, that first half 2025 target that you have?
That top line assumption is right. And that coupled with we think the leverage in our P&L now is such that we can manage OpEx in a very disciplined way. And our gross margin, you know, if you look four quarters ago, we were in 40-ish% gross margin. We reported almost 65% in Q3. Now, that may bounce around quarter to quarter just based on mix, 'cause each of our products carries a little bit of a different margin profile, although all support that what we think is a best-in-class 65% gross margin target. So yeah, we think that from the top line growth, your assumption is a reasonable one. We'll likely put out our prior to J.P. Morgan a flash on revenue and cash, and then give our first look at 2024 from a revenue perspective, which I think to your sell-side analyst question will help inform how we get from here to there.
Okay. Perfect. Looking forward to that. I know one of the recent developments as well here with the business, but I guess more so with the stock, was the really the consolidation of one listing. So maybe, you know, walk us through the decision strategically and also as you're trying to cater to a certain investor base. You know, what was the motivating factor here?
Yeah. I think we took a thoughtful and disciplined approach to that, right? So we were a dual-listed foreign private issuer trading on both the Euronext and Nasdaq from our 2021 Nasdaq IPO. And really, I always say all our good ideas come from the field, customers, sales reps, and investors. And we know that, U.S. investors in particular, whether they have a fund mandate, we don't invest in Euronext, we don't invest in dual-listed, we don't invest in ADSs. We think that that was a really important development to solve for all those things. So we've got shareholder approval. We are targeting December 15th. We're just going through final administrative aspects in Europe that at that point we would be trading ordinary shares solely on Nasdaq, which we think does two things. You know, really provides a clean trading environment and mechanism for our investors. And there is some cost savings, as you would expect from just the administrative aspect of running off two exchanges.
Okay. We got about 30 seconds left, so, I guess maybe a tight question, tight answer here. But if we were to sit here 12 months from now, how would you expect the business to look? What's the same? What's different? What do you hope to accomplish?
Yeah. I would expect to be reporting the type of growth that you intimated. And, you know, I think 2 years ago in our small-cap growth sector, it was all about revenue and growth, and it clearly flipped to profitability. We think we'll be in an uncommon position within our sector where we've got them both covered, and we were very, very confident to the questions you've asked today, Jason, that that's sustainable.
All right. Great. Well, with that, we are out of time. Yep, Mike, thanks again.
Jason,
for joining us.
Thanks.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Great. Try and get started on time here. Great. Thanks, everybody, for joining us here. Second day of Piper Sandler's annual healthcare conference. I'm Joe Catanzaro. I'm one of the Piper Biotech analysts. It's my real pleasure to welcome Schrödinger. Joining us is their CFO, Geoff Porges. Lot to get through in 25 minutes, but I know, Geoff, you wanted to sort of intro, give a little overview of what Schrödinger's been up to and what we have to look forward to, and then we'll jump into Q&A.
Great. Thanks, Joe, and nice to see you all. Just for those of you who aren't familiar with Schrödinger, it's a company that's developing advanced computational methods for discovery of novel materials and pharmaceutical products. This year, we've guided to revenue growth for our software business, which is the sort of company's primary business and original platform. That revenue growth is 15%-18% we're looking for, and we've got a lot of confidence in the outlook for the year. Last year, we did $135 million in software revenue. We've got close to 2,000 customers globally for the software. It's very sticky and becoming an essential tool for the discovery of novel materials and pharmaceuticals. We're also building a proprietary portfolio